Coach
in the hot seat.
The coach is here. Mike Vrabel is brought to you by Northeast Men's Health, the experts in treating men's sexual health, with six New England offices or at northeastmenshealth.com. By John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. And by Northeastern Savings Bank, the leading financial option for New England businesses and the families that power them. Northeastern Savings Bank, upgrade to local, member DIF, FDIC.
How's your drain flowing, Wiggy?
My drain's flowing good.
How's yours?
Good.
I gotta tell you,
strong to quite strong.
I was here Friday night for the show. Looked like it was Looked like it was flowing pretty good during the walk out there. I mean,
I was nervous.
That's street cred,
but it
right
did
there.
Okay.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm assuming you
How
guys
was vacation.
It was good.
Were having fun while you were gone.
You took a shot at me for vacation, like something about Myrtle Beach or something like that.
I mean, well, I just thought that would be somewhere where you would.
That
everybody
would
kind of agreed.
Right.
That
Myrtle Beach.
I mean, kinda.
Really?
I mean,
okay,
from what I can remember.
I mean,
I've been there numerous times.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good spot.
Putt was more of the
putt was kind of the shot. That
right.
Was
yeah.
Me. But how? I'm assuming you and Morgan Wallen know each other from Nashville.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I saw him play in front of 1,200 people in a warehouse in like 2019, and
wow.
Yeah, he's doing pretty good for himself.
Does he? How does that work? Does he call you, or do his people call? Like, how do they lock you in for the walkout?
He handles that.
He does. Yeah, it was cool. Gronk did a good job on Saturday night. I mean, he spiked the guitar. I don't know if
of course
you saw
he
that
did.
Or not. Well, we are. Do you want? By the way, do you want some sort of a walk-up song for this interview every week? Is there?
No. I don't think we have to do that.
You don't. Okay.
Maybe a coffee, but other than that,
we'll get you coffee. What do you want? Black or
Almond Three Splendor?
Okay,
I like the almond.
So we're getting down to it here. Meaningful football in less than 2 weeks. Your first training camp here as a head coach. Are you in the same mindset as Wiggy and Ty Law, some of the old heads that we hear on our show, that guys, the way training camp is now, you can't hit enough. It's a lot of walkthroughs. It's different.
You know, it's different. So I don't know if that's good or bad. I'm just telling you, it's different. That's what some of the rules are. That's what the tracking and the science of everything, of the mileage, and just how much they're running, and the pads that you can have on certain amount of days, and just the schedule's different. And so again, we just have to make sure what we know the rules, and then we follow them and make sure that we're doing everything we can to get them prepared.
Mike,
but it's different.
Mike, it's about the balance, right? I know the balance is different, especially for preseason games. Do you feel like Drake May got enough reps opportunity to in the preseason to make sure he's able to be prepared and ready to go week one?
Yeah, I mean, I think that through the joint practices with Washington and the volume there and the volume with Minnesota – And again, wanted to get him out there for some action, but then I think it was all, there's a balance there. There's a balance of how much you want to go out there and play, but you have to get out there and do a little bit and take some hits and make some throws and stand in a live pocket and all those things.
Mike, when you look back at preseason so far, for you specifically, what's been the most challenging part? Your first season as head coach here. What's the challenge that comes along with that?
Well, I mean, there's something that comes up every day. It's schedule, rain, this, that, the other, travel, guys injured, guys can't go in the morning, adjusting, practice or moving things around. That's the challenge. I think it's just to try to, have some consistent efforts, build a routine, have a flow, I think, to training camp. And I appreciate the fans that came out each and every day. And we try to build a flow and just the daily routine. And now we're switching back to, what we would consider an in-season schedule. So that was a little bit of an adjustment, and that will continue to be one from yesterday to today and moving forward. So I would say that's probably the next challenge, is just getting acclimated to a regular season schedule.
Trevion Henderson said Wednesday that you and the organization have done such a great job of helping them become closer as a group. Are you... Do you see that and feel that, and what how do you do that?
Well, I mean, I think that you just try to invest time in the players and obviously be intentional with building a locker room. I mean, we're going to be together for a long time. This is it's a long season, and we don't, you know, we don't want these to be one-year rentals. We want to try to build something with players and build around them and those pieces. And so, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of, you know, again, there's a personal side of this business and a professional side of this business. And, you know, hopefully we don't let those interfere with each other. And but we certainly are trying to be intentional with making connections throughout the building and between players and between coaches and players.
You talk about being intentional. How important is it to have one voice that's echoed throughout the building? I just think to the public comments, I think a week or two ago, where Elliot Wolf said, well, we're willing to trade a first or a second round pick to acquire a talent. It seems like there are multiple people speaking about the direction of the organization. And that struck me as just odd. I would never envision you saying publicly what you would be willing to trade for an asset.
Well, I mean, I think that when you talk about player acquisition, I think it depends. That's a hard question to answer without talking about who that player is. And I think that we have to go to great lengths to improve this team. And those are different options. And if that's through the draft or trading somebody or trading for a player, you know, I'm certainly not going to speak for anybody or Elliot or anybody else, but we will have to make sure that we invest a lot of time into what those decisions are, look at them and then say, is this what's best for the team? And then if it's not, then don't do it. But if it is, you know, then we would have to consider it. So, you know, I just, you know, the one voice or two voice, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that it's pretty clear that, you know, we're in alignment as an organization, what we want from our players, what we expect, what we want our identity to be, and then we'll go about trying to get there.
I know you don't want to talk about players that are on other teams. Understand that. But players like that, like there are two, maybe three legit playmaker additions that you could add to this football team who seem to be disgruntled. Are you guys working? Is it your philosophy, that the organization's philosophy, you want to go do whatever it takes to go and get somebody who can add to this team right now?
Well, again, we want to continue to strengthen the roster, and I don't know if that's the players that you're talking about or some other players or how that may come about, but I know we have had conversations. We'll continue to have conversations about continuing to improve the roster. And then again, if it makes sense and we feel like it's advantageous to us, then we'll consider it.
Well, a couple of them can get after the quarterback and one can catch the football pretty well. I won't say no names, but yeah,
thank you.
When you look at this roster, one of the guys that I think a lot of fans and you guys have high expectations for, Steph Diggs. I know we hadn't seen him throughout the whole preseason as far as the games. What's the expectation for him week one?
I mean, that he's ready to go and that he helps, and he helps us on, you know, helps our offense, and that he helps Drake. And again, I think that they're building a connection. I think that there's, you know, we've played a lot of different receiver combinations, and I think that that's been good, whether that be in the red zone yesterday or in the 2-minute drive, and, you know, guys are rolling in there and kind of finding a role. And, you know, so again, I think the expectations are high for all of us, you know, whether it be Steph Diggs or Drake or me or Kyle Williams or anybody out there. You know, the expectations, this is professional football. So, but his attitude's been good. He's had a willingness, and I've decided to keep him out of those preseason games that you mentioned.
So that was not – I think one of the great things about being able to interview you is you get to – there's a lot of nonsense that floats around. You get to come on this show and clear it up for all of us. So you deciding to keep him out of games, nothing to do with
– he's gotten a lot of reps. You know what I mean? He's gotten a lot of reps. And
so you're happy with him?
Yeah. I mean, I think where he's at, I mean, he's been able to string days together and, you know what I mean, whether they've held him out of individual and brought him out for team or – I'm just trying to get each guy what they need to be ready for the season.
When you were asked about Jalen Polk last week, you said, you know, rats. Is there a rat problem that you have in the building? Have you figured out
you guys, where I the love leaks how are? You guys, I love how you guys take everything
I
say.
I mean, you say rats. Run. We got to run
well,
with
really
it.
We don't have much else
you guys
to talk
get all
about.
Nervous.
Yeah.
There's rats all over the place.
But do you have to?
I mean, whether that's in this building, whether that's outside this building, I just love the flow of information, and I just felt inclined, and I was pissed off because we stunk and we couldn't do anything. So I tried to entertain you guys a little bit. I was ready to get home and get back to Foxborough.
So you don't have to smoke them out?
No, I don't think that we'll have to smoke them out. I think we just want to be careful. Again, the information that gets transferred to the media, and again, we always want to do right by the Patriots and this football team. I think that's the most important thing.
How difficult is it to compete when it looks like your first week roster will have only one player from the 2024 draft class? Can you compete when you have one guy from an entire class last year?
Yes.
How much more, how difficult is that as an organization to overcome?
I've never even looked at how difficult. It's hard to compete in this league. So however, wherever the roster shakes out at, it's going to be hard to compete. Whether we have 15 guys from a draft class or two or one or none. We'll have a roster and we'll try to figure out the best way to win each and every week, however that is, with whoever we have. Like we've always done.
And how much have you, as a new guy in the organization, scouted and seen what has transpired in the front office and then use that to sort of say, okay, this is who we should have making decisions going forward given what they did last year in the draft?
No, I haven't looked at that one bit. I haven't paid any attention to that. I've just tried to communicate with Ryan and Elliot and try to figure out who we need, and that's been my focus.
You're talking about Drake May earlier. Some panic when the quarterback is running the football. How do you balance his, I mean, he ran a lot in college. How do you balance that with the need to keep your quarterback healthy?
Well, I mean, I think that you have to be able to use his ability, whether that's to extend plays and, you know, when we drop back and throw it, or by design at times. And, you know, he just has to understand that, you know, that we're not trying to take any unnecessary risk in making sure that he protects himself. And gets down and protects the football. And so I think he'll continue to do that. I think we've seen glimpses of that. And I think the more that he does it, the more comfortable he'll get and understand that. But I think you have to be able to use, you know, what he brings in his athleticism.
Mike, what's that relationship like? Because I think a lot of people, like, we look at you and we know what you've been able to accomplish in this league as a head coach. You've been very successful. And I think the relationship between you and Elliot Wolf, what's that relationship like? Because I think that you have a voice, because you wouldn't be in this position without being the Mike Vrabel that you are. Is like, okay, here's what we need to do.
Is he on that same page with you? Yes, I wouldn't get too caught up in that. I mean, okay. We meet every day. We talk. He communicates. We talk through the injuries. We talk to who we need, who's available, what we may have to do here. We met with the players, and when we had to move on from them, we met with them, and both him and I talked to him. We thanked him, and we tried to do it, like I said, as professionally as we could. This is a tough time of year. It really is not an issue for me or going our conversations or how we talk or what we need to get done. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do, whether that was in free agency or the draft or now here.
Two specific players, Drake and Will Campbell, have been talked about as kind of having Jekyll and Hyde between joint practices and then the actual preseason games. I always find it interesting. Wiggy says that he learns more about players when it comes to joint practice and how they perform in joint practice instead of the preseason games. Where do you fall there? Where do you get more out of your players and who they could be in the regular season?
Well, I think the games matter. I think they do. I think the live contact and the tackling and some things you know, everybody thinks that there's a sack every single play in practice. You know, I love that. You know, I asked a player how many sacks he had in his career. He said five, and I said, "You think you got three in practice today?" I doubt it. So, but that's how it goes. And I think that the joint practices are really good. And I think that when you talk about evaluation, you have to look at everything and who they're going against. And you know, but the games are still important. You know, I mean, I think to be able to do these things under, it's just a different feel, right? The play clock, the operation of everything is a little different than practice.
Speaking of stats, I think for you, preseason, two fights. joint practice wise?
I'm telling you, you haven't been in too many fights because those aren't fights. Those are just wrestling matches.
I love you getting right in there, though. I mean, it's like you're 25 years old again.
I just don't want to see any punches thrown. I think when they go to the ground, I just try to get in there and break it up.
No scarring on the cheek either.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
You recovered pretty quick on that.
Never hit a guy with a helmet on. I learned that a long time ago. Fred Baxter punched somebody with a helmet and then broke his hand.
Freddie B.
Yeah, Freddie B. You look at this offense and you look at a guy like Will Campbell, and we've talked about this before, his nastiness, what he can do in the run game. I'd like to know how has his progression been in pass protection, right? Because, you know, that is a huge part of especially all offensive linemen, but especially the left tackle who's protecting the blind side. How has his progression been, in your opinion?
It's been good.
All right.
Good.
The thing that we talk about with young players is just starting to build tricks of the trade, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever those are at each position, the craftiness. And that's something that, you know, we talked to Will about it, and different players, outside linebackers, going against some of these other guys and the tricks that they use, whether that's in the pass game or the run game. So just trying to continue to build that that toolbox of just craftiness that, mm-hmm, I think help a lot of these guys take the next step, take that jump.
I know you want to win every football game. It's probably a fan media thing that the schedule comes out and we start to predict how many wins. Is that part of your process?
They come in different places. They do.
Okay. So you don't sit there and go, hey, this team ought to be a X amount of wins football team. No.
We're undefeated right now.
Do you have an idea of what is a successful season for you?
No, I've never looked at it like that. I think that there's a growth, that there's a clear identity, that we play to kind of who we are, that we continue to try to, you know, like we said, be good enough to take advantage of bad football. If we're doing some of those things, you know, you're going to have to win some close games, right? You're going to have to win some close games in this league, and, you know, we'll have to do that. But I've never looked at what a successful season was. Obviously, we're here to win championships. That's what that goal is. You know, win the division. We've talked about this. Win the division, host home playoff games, and play for championships. So that's our job.
I saw recently one of your media rules for the guys is speak for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Well, you asked me. He asked me what Elliot meant, and I said, well, I'm not going to speak for Elliot. I'm going to speak for me. So you guys are interviewing me. I'll answer questions about me and what I think. And if Wiggy's got something to say, he'll say it. And mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not going to say what Wiggy thinks. How the hell do I know what Wiggy thinks?
Yeah.
I'll let you know.
We don't.
I'll let you know.
Nobody knows, really.
Well, nobody knows, right? Because.
But doesn't that make sense? I don't know. You guys.
Yeah.
You guys want to speak for me and how I think and everything else.
Listen,
I'll just
speak
for myself.
We dealt with a guy for a lot of years down here who wouldn't say. We try to get him to say one thing during an interview. It was very difficult. So
how were those? I should go back and watch.
It was like pulling teeth. It was the
scariest Sunday night into Monday of my life.
How much?
3 years.
How much when it comes to your.
We have a support group.
Yeah.
Who you are as a coach, how much of that is Bill Belichick? How much of that do you think you learned from Bill?
I mean, quite a bit. Just as I learned a lot from Urban Meyer or Bill Cowher or Bill O'Brien and big BC guys over there.
Yeah.
And
Bill was on the show last week talking about your son being on the staff over there.
Yeah, Tyler's helping out, and he's excited, and I'll tell you, I don't know how much time we have.
We have plenty.
No, I don't know how much time I have. I didn't mean you.
All right, what's the story?
We're here until 10.
I was hoping
you got plenty of time.
I was kind
of
so he says.
I want to come down to the office.
So he's like after the first scrimmage. I said, "How'd it go?" He's like, "Well, you know, we threw the ball okay. We couldn't really run." I said, "What was it?" He's like, "Oh, they had some movements and stuff." He's helping out with the O line, and he's like, "The third group really didn't handle movement very well." And he's like, "And the crazy thing is we." That we fall started four times, which I don't know how. We only used the same effing cadence every time. I texted back, "Welcome to coaching."
O-line's the hardest part for them this season, though.
I said, "Welcome to coaching, Tyler."
Now he knows what it's like to be on the other side. You know what's interesting, Mike? You bring up and you say you can only talk about you and the identity. What do you want the identity of this team to be? I know you talked to them. What is that?
Well, I mean, I want you to see, I want our fans to see a team that plays together, you know what I mean, that has a playing team defense, that finishes, guys that are finishing around the football. We got O-linemen that are down the field. We have receivers that are, you know, willing to protect the guy with the ball, a team that takes care of the football, that values the football, somebody that, you know, is able to turn the football over and affect the quarterback. And then a team that makes great decisions. I think that those are important when you're out on the field, is that, you know, we don't have guys that are the second guy in, or we're blindside blocking guys intentionally. And, you know, just like, you know, Marcus hit a big return a couple preseasons ago, and we got three guys that are high screening and using the rules and doing it the right way.
All right. Well, thanks for taking the time.
It's great to see you.
Well, it's great to see you too. And we'll be back here. You got it every Monday. So just set the date, 6:30 a.m.
Okay. And if I'm not here, I'll send Stretch.
All right.
All right. That is Mike Vrabel, head coach of the New England Patriots. And our conversation with Mike Vrabel is brought to you by Cross Insurance. Cross Insurance, official insurance broker of the New England Patriots. And we will be right back from Gillette Stadium.
Joining us now on the phone lines is indeed the quarterback of the New England Patriots, Drake May, and he's brought to you on Patriots Monday by Northeast Men's Health, the experts in treating men's sexual health with six New England offices or at northeastmenshealth.com, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Drake May, how you doing today?
What's going on? I'm doing all right.
Yeah, we're doing well. So now we're in this phase where, you know, preseason is over, training camp is pretty much over, and you're starting to transition sort of looking to the regular season. So feels like a normal time to ask you, what do you feel like you accomplished personally this summer in training camp, and what'd you guys accomplish as an offense?
Yeah, I think, you know, first off for me and the guys, I think just getting you know, accustomed to the new offense. I think the little nuances, situational football, you know, getting, whether it's face down looks, third downs, getting into situational short yardage, red zone. I feel like kind of coming into the offense, just try to, you know, build chemistry, you know, fine-tune the details, and just follow our rules. But I think as a team, you know, kind of what Coach Vrabel's preached was build a team, having guys earn a role, and then from there, you know, get ready to go and get ready to compete week one. So I think the guys, you know, really with joint practice, we got a lot of different looks. Our defense gave us real good looks to every single day in practice. So the joint practice helped us get, you know, somebody else to hit, and I think those guys handled it well. And now we're getting ready for Vegas and just building into, you know, building a bond with the guys that are going to be in the locker room ready to get some wins.
So, Drake, what would you say your comfort level is right now in the Josh McDaniels offense? I mean, I know you've had to switch coordinators each of at least the last three seasons from college into the pros. Would you say it's harder than anticipated? You comfy? Feel like you got a great firm grip on it?
Yeah. I think just building it every day. I think I'm getting more and more comfortable. I think, you know, coming into week one, with the game plan, it'll be a little different, you know, from the, some of the stuff we run in practice, just because you're studying the defense and studying stuff that looks good versus them. So, for me, I feel good. I feel like I'm in a good spot. I think the guys, are coming to work every day at practice. And right now, you know, coach is, you know, working towards week one, and, I think just fine tuning the details. And for me, I'll just going back over stuff that, you know, may be simple, you know, for me in the past, but just going back over the little things and the, you know, little protection cues and stuff that may come up that we may haven't seen. Just to be on top of my stuff, because you never know. You know, week one, sometimes, you know, defenses, or you never seen somebody play a real game, so they bring stuff you may haven't seen.
One of the things that's gotten a lot of attention between Josh and yourself is him talking through your headset in the helmet up to the 15-second cutoff on the play clock. Just wondering how that's going. Is that something you're used to? Did that take a little bit of an adjustment to hear that sort of voice in your head as you assessed the field? How's that going?
Yeah, I think, you know, last year, AVP, you know, I think did a little bit of it. And I think he always tried to, you know, kind of give little tidbits of, hey, nice throw, or, hey, get the guys going, or little things like that. And I think kind of Coach McDaniels, he does a great job of reminding me, you know, reminders and other guys in the huddle and little things that can go a long way in the play. And it's really just more just communication, being on the same page with me and Coach. And I think it's a lot easier to practice it, you know, than really in the games, because in the games it's, you know, it's real life and it matters and those guys are hitting. So I think it's great for us to, you know, work at it every day in practice. And I think it's like, you know, anything that he's seeing, or just ultimate communication of being on the same page is kind of the ultimate goal of it. And I think it's something that any quarterback, positive feedback and positive little words of encouragement is great inside the headset.
Patriots quarterback Drake May here with us on WEI Afternoons on a Patriots Monday. Drake, I've wanted to ask you this for a while. When do you know you've got something special, like a connection with a receiver, back, tight end, whatever? Is it just like suddenly click for you, and then you know, like, oh, we got a groovy little thing here?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think sometimes I don't know whether it's a throw in a game or repeated play or throw in a game that you get. I think you kind of feel like, okay, this is something we got going, and I think that's kind of something that you can build in practice, but really it's proof when it happens in the game, kind of from practice. So I think I'm looking forward to, seeing plays like that and seeing kind of relationships and stuff like that during the game that kind of comes to fruition. And I think that's one of the things you're most excited about is kind of, hey, when this guy gets in his open space, he's a problem, or when this guy gets one-on-one and he's got this route, we got something good. So that's always the fun stuff, and it's something that you try to build in practice, like I said, but, it's really, week to week in the game, it's something that kind of in the back of your mind, hey, always got this, on with this guy or on this play. So that's a good question. It's fun to figure those things out.
Along those lines, Coach Vrabel was on the Greg Hill Show on our station this morning, and he said that Stephon Diggs is ready for the regular season opener, that he's gotten a lot of reps, even though we haven't seen him in live preseason action. Where do you feel like that relationship is with Steph Diggs, and is that something that is going to be sort of like what you just talked about? You feel good, but you'll feel even better when you get a couple games of real action under your belt together.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think he's coming to work every day of practice. He's coming to work, and he's running routes really hard. He's coming in and blocking in the run game. He's just trying to do all the things the right way to help make plays on the field. And I think that's what these guys, him and Mac and Booty and Pop and some of those veterans and guys that make plays in that room are starting to come in and work every day. And I think that's just going to help us in the long run, help us in the future, and help us week one.
So what's your relationship with Will Campbell like? I mean, the guy when he was drafted said he would die out there for you on the football field. I mean, do you take him everywhere? Is he like your personal bodyguard on and off the field?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say bodyguard. No, Will's my guy. I think, like I've said in the past, coming up the Boston for him from the South, and leaving college early is really what top five pick is similar to kind of the journey I had. And I think the biggest thing for me is just to share my experiences and relate to him and be there with him and go out to eat with him, because last year I didn't have anybody to go eat with him, so go out there and hang out with him. And I know it's new adjustment, coming here, to a new city in the north. So I think just being there for him, hanging out and just keeping vibes high. And I think he's always smiling. I think you see a different side of him when it comes to practice and game day.
How about that entire offensive line? Obviously, they've been a work in progress, different combinations, different results. How do you support that process? And are you hopeful that you'll get maybe five guys that then you can build a rapport with? How does that work?
Yeah, I think that's always the goal. And I think it's tough with injuries. It's tough with the nature of the business. And I think you're always trying to build five guys that you have a great feel for and a great comfort level with. But I think that's really just rare. You see all 17 games the same five guys. So I think just you're trying to build the stable connectivity between the guys up front that are in there, and maybe six or seven guys or however many. I think I just know the way they've been practicing and the way they're hanging out and talking with me that they're gonna fight their butt off out there when the ball is snapped, and they're doing everything they can possibility to get things going in the run game and help us in pass pro. So I got full trust in those guys, and looking forward to going out there and going to battle with them.
Drake, he's been one of the highlights of training camp, preseason, in the summer. Efton Chisholm, undrafted rookie free agent out of Eastern Washington, Cooper Kupp University. Coach has praised his playing strength multiple times. He always seems to be popping up in highlights. Kind of came from out of nowhere. What do you think so far?
Yeah, I think it's just a great example of a guy coming in here and trying to earn a role, doing things the right way. Hanging around a veteran like I always seen with Mac Hollins, of a guy who's done in this league, been in a lot of different teams, just hanging around him, going through plays, getting extra conditioning. He's always in the treatment room. I always joke with him. He's always in there working on this and, get his body and getting healthy. I'm like, good gosh, you're the number one treatment guy. But, hey, that stuff matters. And I think, at the end of the day, you know, stuff like that, showing up every day and doing things right, you know, gets you on the team and gets you on the field. And it's what, you know, it's what's made the Patriots so good in the past.
From the outside looking in, it seemed like you had a guy in Jacoby Brissett last year that was a good veteran to learn from, a good mentor. Now that's a little bit of a different setup. You're the starter. Josh Dobbs is the veteran backup that comes in. What is your relationship like with Dobbs, and what can you learn from him as you evolve yourself?
Yeah, I think, you know, first off, you know, Dobbs is the man. I think this is another scenario of a guy who's been in the league, been in a lot of different systems, you know, played in some games, played in the game where he came in on a Tuesday, you know, with the Vikings and started Sunday. So he's seen a lot of different ball. He's been in a lot of different schemes, and I think there's a guy who has a lot of knowledge and just trying to ask him questions and see how he's done things. And, you know, always, I think, in the quarterback room, just try to, you know, feed off each other and support each other. And I think he's been great. And, you know, he's been throwing it great in practice. So it's always good to know, you know, a guy who has a lot of knowledge and also can show it when he's doing it on the practice.
So, Drake, I want to know, you know, what's your level of input like when it comes to both, like, designing the offense and then potentially – with cutdown day approaching, have they talked to you about any guys that you've got good vibes on or good feel for, or just how do they relate to you when it comes to all those specifics in terms of play calling, personnel, or what have you?
Oh, shoot. You know, I got nothing to do with that. I think those, I think that, you know, the front office and the coaching staff, that's what, you know, their jobs to do. And I think, you know, if they ask my opinion, I'll give it, but you know, really, I'm just kind of out here to do my job, do my part, lead the guys, whoever's out there, and in the Patriots uniform. And then, you know, from the scheme wise and the offensive scheme, I think, you know, Coach McDaniel's offense has proven to be pretty darn good in the past. So just trying to, you know, learn as much as I can and you know, execute when we get out there in week one.
Does anything feel any different, the excitement level as you prepare for the season opener as the starter? I mean, I'm sure going back to high school, there were, you know, you were young, you weren't the starter, then you become the starter. College, same thing. Last year you played, but not the opening game. Is there any different juice as you look ahead to the season opener, knowing you're the starting quarterback?
Yeah, no doubt. I think it's, you know, well, last year, you know, preparing and trying to, you know, kind of review the call sheet and kind of hit guys here and there, you know, as the backup going into week one. I think there's always a different kind of juice when you're coming out here as a starter and you run out there the first snap, and then you know, the juices are flowing, and those guys are you know, looking at me, and it's my huddle, and it's my offense. So I think it's a different feeling. I think I'm excited. That's one of the things I'm most excited for, to get out there and get to start week one. And I think you know, I think with the home crowd in front of our fans, and I think there's a lot of build up always for week one, and I think it's always good to get out there and show out.
Drake, it's also our job to help people not just get to know Drake May, the competitor, Drake May, the quarterback, but Drake May, the person as well. So I know you're kind of getting down to all business now, but what was the non-football, non-wedding highlight of the summer?
Non-football, non-wedding highlight of the summer. Ooh. I broke 80 for the first time in golf.
Oh, so nice.
That's wow. That's my highlight. Yeah. Shot 79, if that counts.
But, it sure does. Yeah, you kidding me? I shoot a 179. Come on now.
I won't touch the clubs again until after the season. But hey, it was good. You know, good feeling out there. And other than that, I think just anytime hanging around my brothers, my three brother, older brothers, you know, whether it's playing golf or pickleball or being around them is always, you know, a highlight.
Nice.
Time now for the quarterback question of the week. The quarterback question of the week is brought to you by Northeast Men's Health, the experts in treating men's sexual health with 6 New England offices or at northeastmenshealth.com. This question comes from Joe in Lexington, and he wants to know, have you checked out the Tom Brady statue? And does that create any pressure, knowing that there's sort of a statue of the measuring stick at the position just on the other side of the end zone at Gillette Stadium?
Yeah, I think I always... you'll check out the statue. I think once, you know, something that cool and that special is built and recognized for Tom, I think it was during a preseason game where they revealed it, and I came out here and watched his speech. I think he's always great at giving those types of speeches and hyping the fans up and just being authentic and real about what the game and how seriously he approached it and what the game did for him. So I wouldn't say it gives me any nerves or like expectation. I think it's just more of respect and appreciation for what he did, you know, for the Patriots, for New England, and really for the NFL. So it's always It's always pretty cool watching, like I said, watching the film back and seeing, you know, number 12, you know, in some of the same plays we're running out there in practice today, kind of going through the same process and what he was thinking and what and how coach knows what he was thinking. Just try to enjoy that and embrace that as much as I can, because that's you know, really special and something that I don't take for granted.
You mentioned watching him speak. Do you do that with other quarterbacks? Because it's obviously quarterbacks do a lot of interviews and there's a lot of questions asked. Do you take notes and look at how guys answer certain questions, or do you just sort of go with your gut and wing it?
Yeah, I think that's really what, you know, growing up and being in middle school and being in high school and, you know, watching NFL games and watching them post press conferences or pressers on the field after the win. I think that's where I kind of remember and kind of got the most out of, you know, in my youngin days of watching those quarterbacks that I beloved and you know, wanted to be like and wanted to play like, and how they handled interviews and how they always put it on themselves and cared about the team and wanted to win and compete and competitive. I think that's kind of what was really the biggest thing I kind of got from being such a big fan of you know, playing fantasy football and that stuff and as a young kid. And that's kind of the biggest thing I took away from those quarterbacks, like Peyton and Tom and some of those guys. I got a chance growing up in a great age of quarterbacks, so it's pretty cool.
All right, Drake May here with us on Patriots Mondays, WEEI Afternoons. Good luck this week. Enjoy the week, and then we'll talk to you next Monday.
Thank you, guys.
All right, thanks, Drake. Thank you. May, quarterback of the New England Patriots here on WEEI Afternoons.
The Red Sox front office report with Craig Breslow this week is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, and by findmassmoney.gov. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Your baseball team on a little bit of a roll here. It would probably be difficult for you to pick one thing, but I'm going to ask you to do it anyway. If you look at this team and where they were in April and May and where they have been lately, what from your perspective is the primary difference?
Yeah, so I will try to narrow this answer down and respect the question, but there are definitely contributions being made up and down the roster. But I think the thing that you would point to is pitching. I think we've gotten consistent starting pitching from Garrett and Brian and Lucas and, you know, maybe some inconsistency at the back of the rotation. But those three guys have been really good for a while. And then the bullpen has settled down and we're winning games that we're supposed to win. We look back and think about the one run losses and giving up leads late. And then now with Chapman and Whitlock and the way Wilson and Weissert and Bernie and Mass has fit into the mix, you feel a lot better about being able to hold down leads late.
Craig, can you win a World Series with having three pitches like that? And you brought up Crochet, Bale, and Giolito pitching that way. Can you win a World Series that way? Or do you need another guy to step into that fourth role as a starting pitcher?
I think you can win. Ideally, you know, we'll have guys who will step up, and it might not always be the same guy. But in the postseason, the schedule is set up to where the top of your rotation throws a bunch of innings, and then your bullpen throws, you know, a disproportionate number of innings. So, you know, teams we've seen lean on their bullpens. But yeah, you got to feel really good about, you know, about those three. And then I think there's still plenty of time for guys like Dustin and others to step up.
Craig, not only are you guys playing well right now, but you are expected to get back Slayton and Ref Snyder today. The hope is to get Willie Abreu back next week. What do you hope that those three guys can contribute to this team as you inch closer toward September?
Yeah, you know, we've seen what each of those guys is capable of. Ref as a veteran professional at bat and someone who feasts off left-handed pitching, which is an incredibly valuable role on this team. Abreu's been an everyday guy who brings great defense and, you know, 25, 30 home run potential to the middle of the lineup. And then in Slayton, you know, we have a guy who's been a dominant setup man at times, but has struggled to stay on the field, and his ability to maybe take some of the workload away from guys like Whitlock, Chapman, Wilson, Mats, and others, I think will be really welcome. But we also have to be smart about, you know, kind of easing him into both workload and leverage, and we'll make sure that we do that.
Craig, do you anticipate or have you been told whether or not Bregman will opt out of his contract at the conclusion of this season?
No, that's those conversations will happen in due time. But right now, everybody is focused on what's happening on the field. And every time I have a chance to talk about Alex, I will take that as an opportunity to point out just how impactful he's been on the group, both in the clubhouse and on the field, and on me, in helping me see things and think about things that I maybe otherwise hadn't. So nothing but the highest praise for Alex and his contributions to this team.
Yeah, we were talking earlier this week about Lucas Giolito saying that Bregman had identified that he was tipping his change up. I mean, I seems like a guy who is, it's been said a bunch, but is an additional coach for this baseball team.
Yeah, and there are probably three or four guys on every team that people are effusive about and talk about how, this guy is a baseball person through and through and sees the game uniquely and adds to the culture. And but then there's Alex, who I think has maybe set himself apart from others in that he's been more than advertised, and he came in with this stellar reputation of being a great teammate and helping others. But the way that he's impacted our group is truly remarkable.
Craig, I know the politically correct thing to say is, yeah, we don't really schedule watch. We're kind of, focused on the here and now. And I get it. But you have to be looking at your schedule and going, okay, we're going to be taking on Pittsburgh, a team that we should be able to win that series. You look at Toronto, they're going to be playing Milwaukee. You start to look at your schedule as you move forward because it's about winning the division. You talk about it. When you start to look at your schedule versus theirs, how important is for you to win these games, especially against these teams that you're better than, so when you get to the series against Toronto in late September, you'll be in a great position to overtake them for the division?
Yeah, so it's really dangerous to watch what other teams are doing, which is not to say that we don't all do it, right? But the most important game we're going to play is the one that we play today. And that's because we don't have, we can talk about the one run losses or the games that we should have won, or that, we found reasons for optimism from, but we can't go back and win those games. So, every time we have a chance to win a game, we want to manage aggressively, play aggressively, construct our roster aggressively so that we're banking these games, knowing that baseball has a ton of variance and there are going to be times where we lose 1-0 on, a fluke play after a really well-played game. We win games, and I'm sure I'm not alone. After we win a game, we look to see what other teams around us have done. But there are a lot of teams that are clustered pretty close together, and that team that we're chasing is winning a bunch of games too.
Craig, when you consider that the team has the second best record in the AL, and you look back at to where you were when the Devers trade happened, I always think your position is so interesting because depending on the day, you're either going to get cheers or boos. We're guilty of doing it with you. But when you look back to that trade in particular, you had said, I think that there's a real chance at the end of the season, we're looking back and we've won more games than we otherwise would have. Where do you put the credit there? Do you give yourself credit first and foremost on making that trade happen? Do you put the credit with Alex Cora on making sure all the guys are on the same page? Or do you put the credit with your players and stepping up to the bat and making sure that you guys put on a successful season after a major trade like that?
Yeah. So, I know a lot has been made of that quote. And when I said it, I believed it. I still do. And that's not a criticism of any individual player so much as just thinking that this would potentially clear a path for a more functional roster and for the guys to come together. And I think anytime you look at wins and losses, you have to first give credit to the players. Those are the guys that are on the field and performing and grinding through the competition day to day. And then a ton of credit goes to the coaching staff and to Alex, because these distractions could easily take away from, what we're trying to accomplish on the field, and they didn't. Every player in that clubhouse, every staff member came together, recognized that the goal hadn't changed. That was to compete for the division, to make a deep postseason run, and it's a huge credit to all of them that we are where we are today. but there's also still a lot of work left to do.
Yeah, I definitely mocked that in the moment, and I was wrong. You were right, so sorry about that. I'm just curious. Obviously, you're not going to get into the negotiations or any of the public conversations. You're not going to have those conversations publicly. But just as a general rule, what's the first thing that enters your mind when you see your phone ringing and it's Scott Boras?
probably best to keep those conversations out of the public spotlight.
Does he have a sense of humor? He seems like a robot.
I've heard that criticism about somebody else. So
you should do a podcast.
Scott and I have these just riveting conversations, right, that I'm sure anyone listening would agree.
Well, Craig, you talked about being aggressive, you know, whether it's from, you know, at bats, the way you're managing, but in the front office,
letting a guy tag up at third base,
But he also talked about being aggressive in the front office. And I know it's kind of looking down the road. Are you going to keep that same aggressive mindset when the off season comes?
Yeah, so that is absolutely our intention. You know, we feel like we've got a really strong core here that is entering this ability to compete, for World Series championships year after year. We have to do everything that we can to maintain that position, to continue to put a really athletic, exciting team on the field. And when I talk about being aggressive, yes, there is aggressives in terms of transactions, whether that's bringing guys in via free agency or trades. But also, you know, just right now looking at the organization and figuring out ways to move the needle a little bit, whether that's bringing someone up, maybe it is sacrificing a bit of long-term outlook in order to win today, because this team has put themselves in a position to justify that. We want to continue to find ways to push here and do everything we can to put the team in a position to win. And then, you know, when we head into the off season, hopefully after a deep postseason run, we should continue on that trajectory.
Last one from me, because it came up with Pop Douglas on the show this morning. If you could only go to one restaurant in the city of Boston, one restaurant only, what would your choice be, Craig Breslow?
Well, that's a really good question. I'm sure I will.
I feel like this is the
three band. People with whatever my answer is.
Favorite three bands thing all over again.
I'm trying to give an answer. I'm going to name a restaurant.
Okay.
A handful of times we've gone to Strega with the family. Kids have loved it. I think that's what I would have to go.
All right, Strega.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. That is a great answer.
Last one for me, because I need help with this, with the whole stupid stealing of the signs thing, which I think is the dumbest thing ever, with the new electronics from the catcher's shin guard to the pitchers. Is the pitcher like hearing a one, a two, like, are they hearing something in their ear? Because I was like, how can you steal something when it goes right from the catcher to the pitcher's hat?
Yeah, so the pitcher is hearing something in their ear via, you know, a transmitter. And I think, you know, what really astute base runners will try to do is understand, as a pitcher come set differently, do they position their glove differently when they're throwing one pitch versus another? And that's as old as time, right? Electronics have made it impossible to pick up on how catchers are relaying or catchers are sending signs to the pitcher. And I think this is more now just like pattern recognition and trying to figure out, can I see the way, you know, a guy puts the ball in his glove or his grip or the way that his wrist may be positioned or his glove, and figure out if that indicates what pitch might be coming. But, MLB is very, very clear about what the rules are and what, you know, players are and are not allowed to do. And we take those rules very, very seriously.
I lied about that being the last one. Where are you on realignment?
I think it's interesting and intriguing. You know, on the one hand, from like a just travel and convenience standpoint, I think it would be welcome. But depending on where things land, there's the chance that we could find ourselves in a really, really tough and competitive division, which may be great for baseball, but could make our goals a little bit harder.
Yeah,
well, that's a good point.
Yeah, you'd have to spend.
No, They'd be in that division, be like, wow, that's a juggernaut. And there'd be like some Midwest division, you're like the NL, you know, AL essentially, like, really?
Yeah. All right, Craig, as always, thank you for taking the time. We appreciate it.
You got to take care. All right. Thank you.
That's Craig Breslow.
I'm sorry.
That's
a good point. I like him so much.
All right, it is a Patriots Monday, so let's talk to a Patriot. We have Hunter Henry joining us right now, and Hunter Henry is brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's top provider of drain and sewer cleaning and repair, by Shaw's and Star Market, go shopping, get rewarded, and by Verizon, the New England Patriots, powered by Verizon 5G. Hunter, no Jones today, so it's Keefe and Rob Bradford. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing pretty well. Roster cut down day down to 53 tomorrow afternoon. What is it like each year around this time where you've been practicing 90 guys on the field and then you know you're just a day or two away from whittling all the way down to 53?
Yeah, you know, it's the tough part of our business. You know, when you're getting rid of almost, you know, 37, 40 guys, lose a job. You know, times that by 32, there's, you know, a lot of guys around the league that have competed hard and done a lot of good things. And, you know, this is the sad part of the business. You know, you make, you know, relationships, friendships, whatever it is. And then, you know, it's tough to see guys kind of go through that, the nature of it, man. And it is definitely a tough part of it.
How do you find out about some of the cuts? Is it like, from Adam Schefter, like a lot of us, or is it, you know, the coaches give you guys a heads up, or how is that communicated to you?
Sometimes you find out directly from the guys, or, you know, sometimes you find out online. Just depends on kind of what's going on. I don't know.
Well, Hunter, here's a cliche question, and probably I should never begin a question by saying it's a cliche question, but it is a cliche question. So how does this feel 365 days ago? How does this feel, this team, this dynamic, this vibe, all of it, how does it feel different from 365 days ago?
It's a new team, man. Every year is a new year, so I don't like to compare to the past. I don't like to compare to the future. But, you know, we're working hard. We're doing a lot of good things, a lot of things we're going to continue to improve on, and excited to kind of just continue to go out there, compete, get ready to go. Yeah, so I'm excited, man, but I'm not going to compare from what it was, man. Just focused on what we got going on.
How do you feel like the offense has been performing throughout camp? I think today is practice 20. Obviously you had a few games, you know, that you've had a chance to play, a couple joint practices as well, but overall where the offense is at, how are you feeling?
I feel good, man. I think it's the same thing I just said, man. You know, we've had a lot of practices under our belt, including the spring. You know, feeling good, gelling together, coming together. We do some good things, some things we got to continue to improve on, but, you know, we're excited to go out there and compete, and, you know, the game's around the corner, and we're going to be ready to go out there and play another team.
Hunter, what would this version of Hunter Henry tell the version of Hunter Henry that first came into the league? In other words, all the lessons that you learned about heading into a season, all the things that, you know, we when we're young, we think maybe we have it all figured out. And I'm not saying you thought that, but a lot of us thought we all have it figured out. It's going to be easy. And then we realize you go into a season and all the excitement wears off. You have to do this, you have to do that. What would you tell a younger version of yourself?
Not that I probably did this when I was young, but it's just, you can't ride the highs, can't ride the lows. You got to stay as consistent as you can. Because, you know, you win a few games, you can't ride that. You got to continue to go to work and kind of be that same person. And, you know, you lose a few games, you can't be in the dumps and, feel like you're never going to get out of it. You can't ride it. You got to stay as consistent as you can be.
A lot of rookies on the offensive side of the ball, you know, from the line with Will Campbell and Wilson, and obviously you have Williams and Henderson. What's it been like in the huddle with some of those guys that are brand new to the league?
Oh, it's been good, man. You know, they bring a lot of energy, a lot of, you know, just that young spirit to the huddle that we need, man. You know, a lot of talent as well. So excited to, you know, get out there and, like, actually compete in a real game with these guys and you know, I know they'll be fired up.
So as a quick aside, Hunter, I just drove back from Yankee Stadium. I don't, are you a baseball fan or no?
I wouldn't say I'm the biggest one, but
no, yeah, that's a no. So yeah, I guess so you're not getting a baseball. I guess you're not getting a baseball isn't boring tattoo if you win the Super Bowl.
No, he's
but
not.
Anyway, no, he's not. I do. I asked Marvin Harrison Jr. this a couple of years ago, and I think it's a pertinent question. Hmm. Which is more difficult in your mind, hitting a home run or catching a touchdown pass?
Hitting a home run for sure.
Oh, yeah. Really? Hmm. Oh, that Keefe.
And like an MLB pitcher?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely more difficult.
Sure. Hitting a home run, I don't even know if I could get a hit.
Okay, okay. Making contact against an MLB pitcher or catching a touchdown.
Make contact, it's the actual act of the, you know, hitting it. I like getting an actual hit with fielders in there. I think I can make contact.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is it not necessarily for you, but for the person who's in the middle of it, right? The person whose job it is to do. Hitting, you know, so I'm trying to build you up. I'm like saying, hey, listen, catching a touchdown pass is not easy.
Yeah, but if you scheme it up just right, you could be wide open and just like, just catch
I'm trying
it.
To give the guy credit.
Some of his touchdowns he's caught are very tough. Some of them aren't.
I'm not saying it's easy, but hitting a homer in the MLB, that's definitely harder.
All right. That's what Marvin Harrison Jr. said. I'm checking that. It's 2-for-2. Oh, there you go.
Are you guys fully turning your attention to the Raiders, or is there still some, like, you know, cleaning up stuff from the preseason in the last couple of weeks first?
No, still cleaning up stuff, man. Still competing against our guys, trying to get better. So, you know, we'll start locking in a little bit more on them as the game approaches.
All right, he's Patriots tight end Hunter Henry joins us every Monday on a Patriots Monday. Thanks for the time today, and we'll talk to you next week for week one of the season.
All right, fellas. Appreciate y'all.
Thanks,
right.
Hunter.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I think, again, catching a touchdown when there's, like, you know, a safety and, like, a corner in your face or, like, a linebacker about to hit you, that is tough as
here's,
it gets.
Maybe this is a better question. Which gives you more of an adrenaline rush, catching a touchdown or hitting a home run?
That's a soccer dinger, though. Oh, you should have twisted the question. Get him back on the air. Get him back on.
Can you call him back?
We have a follow-up for Hunter.
Yeah.
Ooh, more of an adrenaline rush.
Because as you're talking about it, because, you know, the work that – this is why football players, you have that 1 week, that one moment.
It's
the grind to go down the field. It happens so few times.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you get in the end zone, and you can see how happy they are.
That's true.
And you hit a home run. Don't you dare bat flip. Don't you dare celebrate.
Don't.
But you must,
the Roman Anthony little toss aside.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's the thing. I'm going to ask Roman Anthony, I'll ask a question of him.
Well, some of these guys probably, you know, recently played high school football, I'm guessing.
That's what I thought, I'm kind of surprised he didn't play.
Well, as a Southern guy, too, you'd think baseball, football would be the two things.
Play two. Like, no. Hey, kids, play two sports.
He was very polite about it, though, wasn't he? Are you a baseball fan? I wouldn't say I'm the biggest fan. Yeah, not at all.
That's code for I'm not asking you about Brian Bayo's ERA.
Name two players. I'm out.
But I like that question. The adrenaline rush. There's nothing like a good adrenaline.
So I think part of that would be where is it? If you hit a home run at Yankee Stadium as a member of the Red Sox, that's a lot of adrenaline. You hit one in like the Tropicana Field, you're like, whatever.
No, I don't think it's whatever.
Tropicana Field, home run, diamond dozen.
Remember when Tristan Casas hit his first home run and the guy in the stands caught it?
He wouldn't give the ball back.
He wouldn't give the ball back?
And they're like, who are you here with? He's like, no one.
I'm just hanging out. I drove from Orlando to hang out. I didn't even know there was a baseball game
he's like,
going
I don't
on.
Like either team. I'm from, like, Michigan. Remember that guy was bizarre.
Oh, no, I went out. Believe me, it was the most listened to podcast I did that entire year.
Wait, you had that guy on?
Yeah, I ran out and interviewed him. It was great.
Whatever happened to that? Did he get the ball?
Whatever happened to the guy?
I don't care about the guy. Whatever the ball? Did Cassis get it?
No, he got it back.
Okay.
Yeah, because the guy didn't realize the firestorm that was coming. So ultimately, he got it.
Did he have to, like, bribe him to get it back? Did Cassis have to, like,
yeah, well, that's how it works. Yeah. I mean, that's how it works.
So he was just trying to run up the price.
Yeah. No. I think initially he was, but then I think he was just oblivious. He was oblivious in a lot of ways, let's be honest with you.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I mean, if you got a baseball at a game, I'm not saying that's not cool, but if the team was like,
hey, can we get that? I'd be like, sure.
But this is
like, unless it's you know, Barry Bonds' 708th home run, I'm like, I can retire off of this.
But by the way, this could only happen to Tropicana Field, where there was literally nobody around this guy just sitting there singing Fire in the Mountain, right, barely knowing where he is. You know, and the ball drops. Oh, this ball. Oh,
what is that?
Oh, here you go. And then, like, and then this is a historic moment, momentous occasion.
Yeah. That's the first of what could be 20 home runs in the career of Tristan Cosme.
There you go.
Losing value by the minute.
The emotion of, I would say this.
Yeah.
The emotion to answer, I was going to say
your own question. Your revised question.
So Hunter Henry would say, oh, I don't know if he would say it, but this is how he feels.
He didn't.
Mike Vrabel told me not to have people say how they feel, right?
He also said there's rats in the building.
Right, there's rats in the buildings, but also he can only speak for ourselves. But I will speak for Hunter Henry and saying the adrenaline rush you get for catching a touchdown pass is greater than hitting a home run, right?
Have you done both?
I've done neither.
Okay.
No, I've hit a home run. Yeah.
In high school, I've done both.
Oh, I mean, you've caught many a touchdown
pass. I would say hitting a home run is cooler.
It's
because I had less home runs than touchdowns. This is high school.
Yeah.
But, like, I would say that is, like,
but you sweet. You know the life of catching a touchdown pass.
Yes. At the high school level. Yeah.
Oh, not in the college?
No, I didn't catch any touchdowns in college.
No, you weren't, like, terrible. The slot receiver?
That was
no?
That was terrible.
No?
We had really good upperclassmen. That's like, we had the wideout room was loaded,
yeah, really?
Which actually is true. But then we're not gonna go
which
down
was,
the road.
Which was better? The home run. No, where do you go again?
Hobart.
Yeah, which was better, the wideout room for the Patriots or Hobart?
Oh, Hobart.
All right.
Oh my god, yeah. I could barely get on the field. Of course, it was better there.
Joining us on the phones now here on WEEI Afternoons is the manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora. He is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Alex Cora, how are we doing today?
Doing good. How are you guys?
We're good.
Good.
We watched a couple wins, and we've watched your top three pitchers roll of late. Obviously Giolito last night, but there's this stat making the rounds that since June 10th, Crochet, Bayo, and Giolito are all in the top five in the American League in ERA. I know you're an eternal optimist, but did you see this coming, this stretch that they're having from your top three starters?
I mean, we trusted them, right? We've seen Bayo grown into more mature pitcher. That transformation started halfway through the season last year. Gio, of course, been there, done that, right? It was just a matter of him getting to the rhythm of the season. And Crochet, I think a lot of people thought that this was going to be the case. I mean, a lot of hard work, a lot of adjustments throughout, right? With Gio mechanically, with Bayo repertoire-wise. But we're in a good spot right now. We're throwing the ball well.
So, Alex, obviously your plan for managing the innings and workload for Crochet has worked very well. Going down the stretch, considering how pivotal these three pitchers could and should be if and when the Red Sox make the postseason, will there be any sort of load management or workload plan for Bayo and Giolito as well?
No, not as of now. We feel they're in a good spot physically. Health-wise, they've been great. They've been able to bounce back, and we got work to do. You know, we still got 29 more games, and you know, a lot of teams are playing well around us. We still have, you know, our goals set in the division, so we got to keep going.
Alex, Trevor Story hits a home run last night, and every time he hits a home run, you guys seem to win. I think you're 18-1. Your patience with him has certainly paid off. He struggled to start the year, and now it just feels like when he's on, the offense is on. What do you attribute Trevor Story turning things around from the beginning of the season?
I think Trevor only has had one bad month, right? It was May. In April, he was really solid. In May, it didn't work out for him, and then since June 1st, he's been one of the best shortstops in the league offensively and defensively. We joke around right in the beginning of the season with his walk-up song, right? Look who's back or whatever it is, you know? And the guy, it's, you know, he, first of all, physically,
he's at another level. You know, he's one of the best athletes, if not the best athlete we have. And honestly, he has simplified his mechanics. You know, in May, he became very internal. You know, everything, my hands, my leg kick, this and that. And then after that, he relaxed a little bit. I think he took one side of the plate and he started catching up with the fastball. And now he's hitting fastballs, he's hitting off-speed stuff, he's playing great defense, and base running-wise, he's elite. So we're very happy he's playing at this level.
Speaking of taking it to another level, your closer, Aroldis Chapman, usually we look at runs or blown saves. He's a guy that hasn't allowed a hit in, I think it's 13 appearances. Obviously, is throwing strikes. How did we get to this Aroldis Chapman late in his first season with the Boston Red Sox, late in his career? Obviously, I've heard you talk about his work ethic, but you know, is there something organizationally that has helped him get to where he's rolling along right now?
I think it started with he talked about last year. He lost around 25 pounds in the second part of the season because he felt he was too rigid on the mound and he wanted to be more athletic. He finished the season pretty well, working the offseason a few things mechanics wise. And then, you know, we've been preaching first pitch strike from the get go. Obviously, every organization, they do that. But I think Bells and the pitching group have done an amazing job with him. We've been able to take care of him as far as, like, innings and up-downs and all that. So he feels fresh. And right now he's in one of those runs that is unbelievable what he's doing. You know, I played with Eric Gagne in 2004, from 2002 to 2004 with the Dodgers. And he was dominant. And, you know, what Chapman is doing right now reminds me a lot of Eric.
Yeah, bullpen has been a very pleasant surprise, Alex. And this season seems to have been littered with so many different pleasant surprises, outfield, infield, bench, bullpen starters. And the latest one is Nathaniel Lowe, who you guys pick up and out of nowhere seems like he can't miss the baseball when he swings. Are you surprised by the success that he's had immediately with the Sox?
First things first, got to give credit to the front office and Bress and the group because as soon as the Nationals made their move, they start talking about Nate, a guy that he's a World Series champ, and he was a good hitter before. He struggled with the Nationals offensively and defensively, hit homers and drove in runs, but hopefully we can get the good version, and so far so good. And he can help us win a lot of games and hopefully win the division.
Alex, you know, people were wondering how Roman Anthony would do. You know, going into Yankee Stadium, and he showed what he's all about. Just your thoughts on Roman Anthony, how he's playing, and just what you're seeing in that young man right now.
Just consistency, not only on the field but in pregame. Just on top of his work, trying to get better defensively, offensively. There's still a few things that he wants to improve. I think we have to solve the lefty part of it, right? But he will. I think he will. The more bats he gets against them, the better he's going to be. But so far, so good, man. And in the clubhouse, communication with the coaches, just the presence, he's been outstanding.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora here with us on WEEI Afternoons. We've talked a lot about the mix between leaders and young players, and that's come together in the clubhouse to seemingly really work. You just talk about Roman Anthony. Seems like he has a really unique relationship with Alex Bregman. What have you seen between those two, the bond that maybe they're building, and why that maybe is at the forefront of what this whole clubhouse is?
Yeah, it's just with Alex, it's just different. He wants to win so bad that, you know, we just got here to the ballpark. He took the bus and he's working, you know, and he studies himself. He studies the opposition and he studies his teammates, you know, and he wants his teammates to be successful. He's not afraid to let them know, you know, where they at with their swing or defensively. And that's what you need. You know, you need people like that in the clubhouse. I think between him and Trevor,
they took that baton, and they're doing an outstanding job for the group.
Alex, how has Walker Buehler taken being moved from the starting rotation to the bullpen? And do you believe he can be a significant contributor for the team down the home stretch towards the postseason?
Yeah, he's been okay. Just getting used to the routine, right? You got to be available every single day. So his routine has changed. I thought he threw the ball well in New York. Just one breaking ball that Jazz got down in the zone and hit a ballpark. But overall, the stuff was good. The bounce back is the thing that, you know, we have to pay attention. Obviously, with his injury pass, you know, we have to keep him healthy. But, you know, he was available yesterday, so that was good for us. And I do believe he's going to help us win a lot of games.
You mentioned earlier with Nathaniel Lowe tipping your cap to the front office, bringing him in. A lot of us left the trade deadline maybe disappointed, but one of the guys they brought in, Steven Matz, looks like he has become sort of a trusted part of your bullpen. What have you learned about him since you've spent some time with him and what he brings to your bullpen?
Well, first things first, man, he's a great athlete, which helps him to bounce back very quick. The other thing, he has a unique fastball. It's one very similar to Whitlock, but from the left side, and little by little, we have trust him in big situations. He's getting lefties out. I do believe he can get righties out. The other day, we let him face Goldschmidt in New York and got him out and helped us win the game. So, you know, he's having a lot of fun. He enjoys the environment. He understands, you know, what it takes to you know, finish the season, which is the most important thing, and I'm very happy that he's here with us.
And Alex, since nobody has, we've only seen a couple at bats. It was a recent call up and whatnot. What are your first impressions of the password? What's the kid like?
Yeah, he's a good kid, good athlete, good defender. Has faced some tough lefties, right? Hey, go ahead, kid. You're hitting fifth against Max Fried. Go get him. And then yeah. He was Rodon, but you know, he was having a good season in AAA. We needed him to be here, right, because of some roster stuff. And there's a good chance he'll start tomorrow against the lefty.
Alex, we couldn't let you leave this interview without a question about who's the next pitcher coming up from the minor leagues. Peyton Tolley seems to be killing it. Lou Maloney calls him the Piglet, is very excited. How soon do we see Peyton Tolley?
We got to be patient, you know. There's other stuff that has to happen, right? And we're in a good spot with the big league roster, but obviously, like I always said, man, these kids, their job is to, you know, keep improving and keep showing us that they belong to the big leagues. And if we do believe they're ready, they're going to contribute here.
Before we let you go, you said Steven Matz is having fun. How much fun is Alex Cora having? The last few Augusts seem like they haven't been a lot of fun for you. We talked about teams fading, falling out of contention. You must be having some fun.
Yeah, especially because our fantasy football team is ranked number one with the draft. We had a great – I mean, it was amazing. We got Chase, Jacobs, Jackson, Walker, Metcalf, and some others. So we were ranked number one, the coaches. Now we just got to put the work, and hopefully we can win the championship.
And is this the league where Veritek decided the order with the BP session, the picks?
Yeah. It was – not the order. It was the order to choose the order. So there was no, I mean, we didn't take advantage of the situation, but we were the number two pick, and we got, I think, you know, we got the best player in fantasy football, Ja'Marr Chase, and we just got to go now and hopefully win the championship. That's the most important thing.
All right, so we're angling for two championships, fantasy football and real-world baseball. We're just going to pull it all together this fall, right?
Balance.
You imagine if we do well, that'd be sick.
All right, thanks, Alex. We appreciate it a little bit.
All kidding aside, we're having fun. It's a good group of guys. In New York, a lot of fans from Boston. We're at the stadium here in Baltimore, the same thing. So hopefully we can continue and, you know, win the whole thing.
Sounds good. All right, Alex, we'll talk to you next week. Good luck tonight.
Later, guys.
All right, see you.
Thanks, Alex.
That was Alex Cora, manager of the Boston Red Sox and the manager of a dominant fantasy football team, apparently, that got the best player in fantasy football. A little advice for us here. We have our draft in the Keefe League tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, 9
apparently,
o'clock.
Ja'Marr Chase is the best player in fantasy
football.
According to Alex Cora. Okay,
he's
Alex.
Number one, yeah.
Yeah.
Fantasy, yeah, he's not that good.
Fantasy football, big part of MLB
clubhouse. Yes, 100%. It is huge in Major League Baseball.